technical difficulties.
After the,
this
the end,
is
maybe?
The Joint Committee on Ways and Means, Friday, March 3rd. And I noticed from the hall and the overflow, we're not even the main game this morning. So for any of you who are tuning in to this first sort of regular meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, I just wanted to announce if any of you are expecting something like a freshman hazing, it doesn't happen in Ways and Means. Is that correct, Senator? Thank you for confirming that, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 5020, the bonding authorization. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, House Bill 5020 makes changes to previously approved bond authorizations and does not approve the issuance of any new bonds. In particular, the measure approves the use of $785,000 of Article 11G bonds, $10,395,000 of Article 11Q bonds, previously authorized to the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission for the Oregon Institute of Technology's renovation and upgrading of Cornett Hall. It authorizes the Oregon Business Development Department to use $990,744 of remaining lottery bond proceeds authorized in 2013 for the Portland Japanese Garden and reduces the amount originally authorized for the Confluence Project. $990,744 of lottery bonds originally authorized in 2015 for the Portland Japanese Garden will be used to replace the Confluence. Oh, that sentence is there twice. I apologize. Total amounts authorized for each project remain the same. Approves statutory changes to ORS chapters 286A, 291, and 341 related to the administration of the state's bonds programs. Clarifies the Department of Administrative Services roles as the bond program administrator for ongoing general fund support of general obligation bonds and lottery revenue bonds. The Article 11G bond program from community colleges is combined with the public university program. Obsolete community college facilities accounts are repealed. The budget report includes clarifying language allowing the use of Article 11Q bond proceeds remaining from project savings on the East Tunnel Structural Improvement Project at the University of Oregon towards additional work at the East Tunnel Utility System. Language in the budget report also allows the consolidation of 7 separate Article 11Q general obligation authorizations to the Oregon Youth Authority for capital improvement projects at multiple facilities into 1 deferred maintenance authorization. Colleagues, your Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends approval of House Bill 5020 as it's been amended and reported out to you folks.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Is there discussion?
Yeah, a question to our carrier here and my good friend, Representative Smith. I wasn't able to dive deep. The Confluence Project was what?
That was a historical, archaeological, public... At Celilo Falls, but how would you describe
Senator
it?
Senator Johnson?
It is a Maya Lee designed massive piece of public art designed to commemorate and remember Celilo Falls, designed by Maya Lee, of the architect of the Vietnam Wall. It is one in a series of big public art projects that started during the beginning, 7 of them, that started during the Lewis and Clark commemoration. And this is by far the most ambitious and the largest. A 501c3 was formed. It's raising its own money. And this was the legislature's participation in that massive piece of art.
That's Lila Falls, District 57, right next to Hopkins District as well.
Thank you. Also, my good friend. And so whose district is the Japanese Garden?
Right behind you.
Oh, your district.
Yeah. Here, can I explain?
No more
Senator
questions.
I believe maybe Representative McLean already knows that the reason this is being done is because the issue on the first project is that there is disagreement amongst tribal interests about it continuing. The bond proceeds have to actually be spent as we speak, in a sense, or we're going beyond the normal date for utilizing those bond proceeds. So in effect, you're transferring this to that project, and then you will be transferring funds back to the other project in this session, is my expectation.
All right, thank you.
Representative Wisnant.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the carrier, how much interest is this going to cost the Oregon taxpayers?
Legislative Fiscal Office.
And I'm sorry, I'm referring to the Japanese gardens. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, Representative, can you repeat the question?
My question is, how much is the total cost of interest and everything going to be on this with the bond?
Okay, the approved project costs for both are $1.5 million each, and I'll have to get back to you on how much interest is actually going to be incurred on the bond sales.
Do you know the rate, Madam Chair? No.
The question was, do you know the rate?
No. And in fact, the bonds that were sold for the Confluence project were sold in 2015, and I can get you that right. But the bonds that are going to be sold for the Japanese garden, now the Confluence project, haven't even been sold yet. They're just going out for sale right now.
Thank you.
Just to add very quick math here on $995,000 at 3.5%, just assuming that rate and assuming a loan term of 20 years, the interest would be $389,000.
Thank you.
That's just a very rough calculation.
Other comments or questions? Are there objections to the motion? Two. Have those been recorded? Motion passes. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 5020, opening a work session on House Bill 5043, Capital Construction. Representative Huffman.
House Bill 5043 is the capital construction budget bill for the 15-17 biennium. The bill establishes authority for planning, design, and construction of projects with costs over $1 million. And I don't know how much the interest is on that one either, in case somebody wants to ask. Greg, can you get your calculator out
there? I'm ready.
Expenditure limitations for...
Is that it, Representative? That's a legitimate concern, how much money the total is spent.
He's got his... He's
you should say that.
I just don't have it on.
That doesn't have anything to do with your bill you're carrying.
I apologize. Expenditure limitations for capital construction projects expire 6 years after being authorized. Projects approved in this bill will expire on June 30th, 2021. The bill, as amended, establishes $23,850,000 other funds capital construction expenditure limitation in the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for three community college construction and renovation projects. The budget report includes descriptions on the capital construction projects and the expenditure limitation amount for each project. Projects are funded with previously authorized Article 11G bonds. The bonds are anticipated to be sold during the 15-17 biennium, and the projects require corresponding expenditure limitation. Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends HB 5043 be amended by the Dash 1 amendment and be reported out due pass as amended.
Thank you, Representative Huffman. Yes, Senator Trott.
Thank you. Just to answer one of the questions, the staff would have no idea what the bonds are going to cost because they don't, when they go out, that's when the rate is determined. The evaluation is approximately 4.5%. So that's what it's based on.
Questions or comments about the motion for House Bill 5043? Objections? Motion passes, and I'm closing the work session on House Bill 5043. Opening a work session on Senate Bill 5508, Budget Reconciliation. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Senate Bill 5508 is a budget reconciliation bill that implements the rebalanced state budget for the 2015-17 biennium. It should be noted that the rebalance actions needed for the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority will be considered at a later time. As amended, the bill makes various technical adjustments to agency budgets previously passed by the legislature and finalizes some general fund components of the statewide budget. Based on the March 2017 revenue forecast and after the projected transfer to the rainy day fund, 2015-17 rebalance actions leave an estimated general fund ending balance of $173 million. Actions include, but are not limited to, reduces the general fund by $9.6 million and lottery funds by $2.9 million in several agencies to capture savings from debt service adjustments. Appropriates $9 million general fund to the Public Defense Services Commission to fund contracted public defense services. Appropriates $8 million general fund to the Department of Forestry for emergency fire costs. Appropriates $6 million general fund as part of continuing actions to address a budget shortfall in the Department of Corrections. Appropriates $3.1 million general fund to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission for Oregon Opportunity Grants. Appropriates $2.3 million general fund to the Oregon Judicial Department for higher than anticipated third-party debt collection costs. Implements a net zero rebalance for the Oregon State Police. Allocates $1.1 million Measure 76 lottery funds to the Department of Agriculture for the eradication of two invasive pests. Appropriates $400,000 general fund to the Legislative Administration Committee for security enhancements at the Capitol, paid for with savings from the budget for the Legislative Assembly. Increases other fund limitation by $4 million for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission for liquor agents' compensation and bank card fees due to higher than anticipated liquor sales. Disappropriates $28.3 million general fund from the Emergency Board. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends SB 5508 be amended by the Dash 3 amendment and be reported out, do pass as amended.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
This is a question that arose in the Ways and Means Subcommittee with respect to a question of truing up what was due to counties for economic development purposes out of video lottery. And I don't think that it was included in this budget rebalance. I'm still going to support the bill. But the issue has arisen in that subcommittee. It arose in CAP construction. And I think that it remains an unanswered question, a question with the counties feeling as though they have not gotten a statutory share of the video lottery proceeds. And I don't know if the professional staff, Mr. Bender did a little bit of research on it. I don't know if the professional staff can comment on that issue or a status report on where we are in the conversation.
Mr. Rocco, would you like to?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, you're correct. There was no adjustment included in this. One of the issues is we need to have an allocation bill to do that kind of an action, and we did not anticipate having an allocation bill this time around.
Mr. Rocco, this time around, meaning this meeting or this?
This meeting, okay. Yes, correct. This is a practice we've used for several biennia now, and it does not just apply to the counties for their economic development money, but it also applies to other statutory
distributions. Mr. Rocco, can you explain the practice so that the committee understands?
The practice is that we use the, for close-of-session forecasts for the lottery, it is the May forecast. For the close-of-session forecast for general fund is the September forecast that comes out after we know all of the actions that the legislature has taken to adjust general fund revenues. So that forecast is for the lottery allocation, however, we use the May forecast. And the actions that the counties were talking about were based off of the May 15 forecast, you know, the May 2015 forecast. In some cases, that changes occur after that forecast. Lottery has gone down in the past. Sometimes it goes up. And we made this change, I think, 6 years ago, roughly, to use that May forecast and then sort of guarantee a level of funding. In one biennium, it was lottery went down, and the counties benefited from that. The last two biennia, lottery's gone up, and they have they feel that they've lost revenue because of that. We do this, as I was saying, we do this for other statutory distributions of lottery dollars, such as gambling addiction, sports action, and other programs like that.
Thank you very much for a very comprehensive report. What I'm taking away from this is that come May, we'll be able to reengage in this conversation and if truing up is required, at least have the discussion at that point.
Madam Chair, Senator Johnson, there will be other opportunities if the committee so desires to make that change.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Other discussion? Yes, Senator.
I, too, share Senator Johnson's concern about this. In fact, until just now, I was prepared to vote no on this because I think it's an important issue. It was actually the 2011-13 biennium that we changed the formula that was in ORS 461.547, which authorized 2.5% of the net receipts of lottery to go to counties for economic development. The program had worked well. It's a major economic development funding source for counties. 90% of those funds are distributed back to the counties based upon the actual gaming in that county, and 10% goes back distributed equally among all the counties. So even the ones that don't have a large population base get a considerable help on economic developments, dedicated economic development funds. And when I asked Mr. Bender to research this when it came to my attention in early February, I think in his response, he was surprised to find out that the counties over the last two bienniums had actually lost money in this program because the first year we did it, there was a surplus for them. But just for the record, on 2013-15, the counties lost over $2 million of their economic development funds because we quit using the formula that was in ORS 461.547. And are projected this year to lose nearly $3 million. And if this isn't the session or the formula, or if this bill is not how to make our counties whole, I think it's important that we go on record as, or at least I want to go on record as saying we need to, if we're going to rebalance our departments, we should also do it for our local partners, especially on something that is so important. And previously, for most of the time of the video poker lottery, they were receiving 2.5% of the net receipts. So I would join the good senator from Scappoose that we need to look at this and hope that we will. But because of the explanation now, I will be a yes vote for the bill. I was going to have a protest vote because I think our counties are being shortchanged from an agreement that we had agreed to.
Yes.
Senator Devlin.
I just wanted to put something on the record. This has been an item of discussion. I'm sure it's going to be an item of discussion in the coming months. And hopefully we'll come to some resolution of it. But I want to put people's minds back in 2011. And in 2011, the big issue was certainty. And 2011 was the biennium in which we actually budgeted everything at the minimum we thought was necessary to continue operations, and then we took 3% away from everybody because we did not know how stable our forecasts would be. And ultimately, in that particular biennium, they weren't that stable on the general fund side. And we ended up not returning much of that 3% to various agencies. So it's like a different time in history, in a sense. People were trying to provide stability to people, so that's why they took the money. That's, I think, one of the reasons why we went in this direction, to try to provide more stability. Some of you will remember that we also, in the state school fund, did not take 3% back from it and actually told people that we were going to keep it at that level, regardless of what the forecast would show in the future, and we wouldn't subject it to the 3% holdback. So it's a different time. Certainty was something people really desired back in 2011 in terms of budgeting, and there was not any resistance to it at that time. So I just wanted to put that on the record.
Were there other comments on this side, comments or questions? So we're still on Senate Bill 5508. No other comments or questions. Are there objections? No objections to record. Motion passes. Closing the work session on Senate Bill 5508. Opening a work session on Senate Bill 55A relating to the Oregon Promise Program. Senator Girard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 55 provides supplement funding for the Oregon Promise Program. This program is in its first year of operation and provides tuition waivers to eligible community college students who are recent high school graduates. Due to the higher than anticipated participation in this new program, an estimated additional 3,556,302 is required for the remainder of the school year and biennium. This estimated amount takes into account the projected increase in the number of students, new students enrolling in the winter and spring quarters, and the retention rate of nearly 100% of the students continuing the program for the winter and spring quarters. Any of this funding, which is not spent by the end of the biennium, will revert to the general fund. The bill also suspends the $10 million annual statutory limit in spending for this program. This suspension is for this year only. The Capital Construction Subcommittee recommends Senate Bill 55 be amended by the -A2 amendment and be reported as due pass as recommended.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, I just want to have a reminder here. Oregon Promise was created in a bipartisan manner, and I think by all standards, it's been a success. But it's important for us as a budget committee to realize we're about to put $3.5 million additionally into this, and that's going to create an even greater expectation for the next biennium, of which we now have a $1.8 billion shortfall to meet current service level. And so this is a classic example of additional roll-up costs. There's no doubt it's a great program. There's no doubt it's successful. There's no doubt it's helping kids. But we're growing an expectation that's going to be hard for us to meet in the next biennium.
Thank you. Senator Monroe.
Thank you. Oregon Promise has been monumentally successful. And anytime you have a new program like this that succeeds beyond our expectations, it costs more. That's a good thing and a bad thing. But I'm very pleased with the fact that Oregon Promise is providing more and more, mostly younger people, opportunities to go to community college and to get trained for family wage jobs. They will pay more taxes, and so in the future, we'll more than recover the additional costs. In the short term, we have to figure out how to do with this program that is exploding in terms of the way it's impacting students all over this state.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I agree with the previous two speakers, but especially with Representative Smith. I guess my concern is that in the carry, you made mention to the positive outcome of the retention rate, I guess, from one year to the next. What I'm trying to figure out is there demonstrable evidence of matriculation and of securing jobs? I am more interested in the outcomes rather than the throughputs. And if we're just counting bodies that are moving through community college, are we tracking, are they going on to four-year degrees? Is there any employment tracking? Do we actually know what's happening with the program that demonstrates, as Senator Monroe characterized it, monumental success?
If the question is to me, I will answer. Remember, this is for freshman students. So to track it, did they go on to college? We haven't got there
Thank
yet.
Thank you. We've only got 1 year of retention
We've
in the
only
second
got 1 year
year
of retention. So that will be something that we have to ask the question of. I would agree with Senator Smith, Representative Smith, that we have to follow this program because it is going to expand in cost. This is only the first year's cost. The next year, it will be double because you're going to have two sets of, you know, freshman and sophomore year students. So it's going to be quite a bit higher. I would kind of disagree a little bit that this is a roll-up, which, it, I mean, you could label it as a roll-up, but this was a promise that was made to students, and I think the state has an obligation to fulfill that promise. So, but I do think the program is going to need to be reevaluated as to what the final cost is. But some of us, me included, the amount that we're paying on higher education, I think, is kind of a disgrace. And so I think this is very worthy, and I would urge your support.
Senator Roblin.
So I just want to make it clear. The roll-up, the conversation we're having is the 100% rate is from first quarter or first semester to second quarter or second semester. It's not about a year yet. We haven't had a year. It has not been going except for first term of this school year. And so the second term of this school year, or if you're in a, I'll say terms because it could be semester or otherwise, most of ours are the anticipation is that this will go all year long. This is just to pay for that first year, not the second year. There is absolutely no way to check on the future of those kids and how they're going to be doing. But the one thing we did is we were the highest state in growth of FAFSA forms completed, over a 10% growth, bigger than any other state, part of this program, which meant that we also got a lot of more federal money in, which is exactly what happened in Tennessee when they put the program in. And it was part of our goal was to make sure that we received as much federal funding as we can to help our higher ed system. And so for those reasons, I think this is really the thing we have to do, and I appreciate the and the commitment that was made to those kids that came out of high school last year. It also reduced in certain of our schools. We remember we had the fifth-year program. We had a big conversation about that last year. One of the schools that was had the most students, Lebanon, had 130 kids in the fifth-year program, much more expensive than this program. And they now have 8. And 100 kids are taking care of the promise. So it is doing exactly what we asked it to do. It's doing exactly what we anticipated it would do. And I appreciate the carry of bringing this upon.
Senator Johnson.
I just want to tee off something that Senator Girard said, that we made a promise. And yes, promise is in the title. I think we have to be extraordinarily careful about what we do promise. We promised 350,000 Oregonians they'd have insurance. And I think that some restraint in making promises that have a questionable fulfillment is something that we as legislators ought to take very seriously.
Senator Winters.
I just wanted to actually echo both Representative Smith and Senator Johnson. And granted, this program is successful. It's doing what we asked it and thought that it would do. But we also have to look to budgetary impacts in this body. And we know, those of us who are chronologically advantaged, that sometimes it's like a roller coaster. You know, I heard the word federal dollars and that we were actually making certain that we got that. Well, as you know, those of us who have been around here sometimes, they're not always available. So I think this issue of talking cautious by some of our colleagues is a good one, as well as the same time when we start talking about various policies. Because this is not the only program that we have promised sure. that we will do. And so I just need to just kind of add on a little bit of wisdom of those who have been here for some time, that we are a looking to the future budgets as well as today.
Thank you. Other comments or questions on this motion, Senate Bill 55A? Objections? No objections to record. Motion passes. Senate Bill 55A, closing the work session. We will now begin hearing federal grant application requests. Representative Huffman, Criminal Justice Commission.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 21st, the Public Safety Subcommittee recommended approval of submission of a federal grant application for $1.5 million from the Criminal Justice Commission to the U.S. Department of Justice Bureau of Justice Assistance for adult discretionary drug courts. The purpose of the grant is to build or expand drug court capacity at the state or local level to reduce crime and substance abuse. The Criminal Justice Commission would use the grant proceeds to financially support four local Oregon treatment courts and to pay for a portion of the cost of the Oregon treatment court case management system replacement. There is a 25% match requirement that the agency would meet within its current budget. If successful, the Criminal Justice Commission would return to the legislature to seek additional federal funds expenditure limitation. The Public Safety Subcommittee recommends approval. And I had asked in the hearing where the four courts were, and Mike said that they were here in the valley. They were the larger courts that could handle the federal reporting requirements that come along with the federal grant. The actual receipt of the grant is iffy, but if it is received and those four courts get the money, then that will free up money to use at other courts throughout the state. Senator Winters, did I say that correctly?
You did.
Okay, thank you.
Comments, questions, discussion?
I just have a brief question. At the end, this is for a three-year period of time. What do we anticipate will happen at the end of the 3 years? Will we make submission for an additional federal grant? Will this go away, or will we then have the tough decision to continue funding it with general fund? What historically have we done with this?
Can we hear from LFO, please?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Smith, this, as you've pointed out, does run for a period of 3 years. The Criminal Justice Commission has received this grant in the past, so they could choose to reapply.
So we have the opportunity then to re-up in 3 years?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Other discussion? Objections? Motion passes. This is approved. Mr. Rocco, anything else I need to do to dot I's and cross T's on this one? Department of Geology and Mineral Industry, Senator Girard.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. On February 16th, the Natural Resource Subcommittee recommended approval of the submission of a federal grant application by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the amount of $388,379 for the National Tsunami Hazard Mitigation Program. The grant does not require a state match, and the department has successfully applied for a similar grant in prior biennium. Grant awards are anticipated to be announced in August. Grant expenditures can be accommodated using federal funds expenditure limitations assumed in the department's base budget. The Natural Resource Subcommittee recommends approval of this grant request.
Discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Thank you, Senator Girard. Senator Frederick, Department of State Lands.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 16th, the Natural Resources Subcommittee recommended approval of the submission of a federal grant application by the Department of State Lands to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in the amount of $772,700 to be used to transfer 80 acres of upland habitat from the asset pool of the Common School Fund to the South Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve. The federal funding would allow the department to fully compensate the Common School Fund for the value of the land, timber, and minerals. Natural Resources Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you. Discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Moving to the next grant application request, Senator Monroe, Housing and Community Services Department.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. On February the 27th, the Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommended approval of the submission of a federal grant application by the Housing and Community Services Department to NeighborWorks America for a Project Reinvest Financial Capability Grant in the amount of $1,575,000. The grant will support counseling services related to financial literacy, pre-purchase home buyer education and counseling, and asset building through financial action plans provided by 17 homeownership assistance centers under the contract with the department. NeighborWorks America is a public nonprofit organization established by Congress. The source of the grant funds is federal legal settlement dollars from the Bank of America secured by the United States Department of Justice. There was a concern expressed in the subcommittee that two counties may not be eligible for funding. However, the agency has since clarified that all homeownership centers providing the requisite services who applied for grant funds will receive funding if the grant is awarded. The two counties in question just won't contribute additional points to NeighborWorks scoring of the agency's grant application. Grant funds are not eligible to supplant existing pre-mediation or other foreclosure prevention counseling services provided through the Oregon Foreclosure Avoidance Program or the National Foreclosure Mitigation Counseling Program. Instead, the funds are intended to improve the financial resiliency of communities that have been impacted by foreclosure and economic downturn by improving individual financial acumen and coaching to achieve financial goals. No matching funds are required, and Housing and Community Services does not anticipate needing additional staff to administer the grant funds. Your Transportation Economic Development Subcommittee recommends approval.
Expensive. I was sitting next to Schroeder.
Discussion?
And he did that.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I have a couple. Do you want me to do each one of them?
Yes. How about one at a time, and then we'll get a response?
I wanted to clarify, Madam Co-Chair, that this is not related to the 2009 litigation that the good Honorable Representative Hovey and I worked in with a foreclosure deal. Is that correct?
Good.
Could we have LFO respond?
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wisnant, I unfortunately can't answer that question for you. I do know that it is related to a settlement from Bank of America.
Let me follow up my help. Sir. If we go down to the last paragraph, you're saying this is not to supplant the foreclosure prevention counseling services developed through that bill that we did. But that bill is not funded. It's not fully funded. It has not been completely used up either, I don't think, those funds that were given to us as part of the bank settlement. The other question I had, Madam Co-Chair, was the last paragraph. I don't understand what the two counties in question, the additional won't contribute additional points. I'm not sure about that. And the other final question in the last paragraph was, what does it mean when you say does not anticipating needing additional staff? If we're getting additional money to counsel more people, there's got to be more staff.
Okay. Co-Chair Nathanson, Representative Wisnant, I will attempt to answer the questions. I may need to ask you to remind me what they were. There were quite a series of them there. But let me first talk about the two counties in question. At the time, there was concern about the definition of, remember, this is a federal grant application, Okay? So there was concern at the time in subcommittee that there were two counties that didn't qualify for the federal definition of areas of greatest need or areas of extraordinary need. And those counties were Yamhill County and they were Columbia County. That didn't mean that they wouldn't be able to utilize these dollars. All that meant was that they didn't contribute to, you know, additional higher scores in relation to other states that might apply for this grant. So that's okay. So we got that. In terms of your previous question about the settlement that you were talking about, they are two separate things. This is a federal grant, and I believe you were talking about the state Oregon foreclosure avoidance program, which is a settlement related to state money that was given. So they are two separate things, hopefully.
Madam Chair, my comment. Thank you. Well, the original, you know, it came from the banks, and the banks right. and the federal government got the money from the banks, and then they gave us
and
our
they gave
share.
It to states. Yes, but ma'am. This is a federal
okay,
grant
so that's good.
Coming
okay.
down. Okay.
Thank you. And then the last question about does not anticipate needing additional staff.
Right. Okay. And Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wisnant, Housing and Community Services will not need additional staff to administer these grant dollars to the various homeownership assistance centers throughout the state that will be sub-recipients of this grant money. So they are basically passing it through locally.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It's being passed through to, for example, private not-for-profit organizations or other groups.
Co-Chair Nathanson, the homeownership assistance centers in question are located throughout the state. Some of them are part of the local community action agency. Some of them are standalone, but yes, they are private not-for-profit types of entities.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. Thank you, Vances.
Other discussion, comments, objections? Motion passes. Senator Steiner Hayward, early hearing detection.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 20th, the Human Services Subcommittee recommended approval of the submission of a federal grant application from the Oregon Health Authority to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in the amount of $250,000 per year for 3 years to support the early identification of infants with hearing loss. Portland's Early Hearing and Detection and Intervention Program resides in the Public Health Division and is responsible for collecting data and tracking that one, the hearing screening status of all newborns, two, follow-up diagnostic evaluations when appropriate, three, eligibility and enrollment in early intervention services for infants with hearing loss. EHDI facilitates data sharing at each step and also supports the process, making sure infants do receive follow-up and early intervention services. EHDI does not, however, provide any of the direct services. This grant would provide funding to improve the capacity of current EHDI information systems to collect complete data, including expansion of electronic data exchange. It would also provide expanded capacity to participate in a CDC data exchange and improve data quality and reporting. No state matching funds are required, and the agency does not need any additional positions. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you. Discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Next item, Representative Rayfield, Oregon Health Authority.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 23rd, the Human Services Subcommittee recommended retroactive approval of the submission of a federal grant application from the Oregon Health Authority to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in the amount of up to $200,000 per year for 4 years to improve the data collection related to hepatitis B and C. The purpose of this grant is to improve data collection for acute and chronic hepatitis B and C and perinatal hepatitis C. The grant will focus on improving the completeness and timeliness of laboratory and case information reported. It will also focus on improving information on the true incidence of the diseases by supplementing case data with data from other sources such as Medicaid, hospital discharge, Oregon's Cancer Registry, and the Behavior Risk Factor Surveillance System Survey. Additional information will improve outbreak responses and will help as guide the state and local prevention and treatment programs. The grant application was submitted on January 31st, 2017, and the agency submitted the required 10-day notification letter. No state matching funds are required, and the agency does not need any additional problems. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval.
Thank you. Discussion? objections.
Can you repeat that, please?
Great minds.
Objections other than the speed reading. Motion passes. Representative Rayfield again.
For Senator Hansel, on February 14th, the Human Services Subcommittee recommended approval of the submission of a federal grant application from the Oregon Health Authority to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration in the amount of $6.6 million per year for 2 years to address the opioid crisis. The purpose of the grant is to increase access to treatment and reduce unmet needs for opioid use disorder treatment while decreasing opioid overdose deaths through prevention, treatment, and recovery. The grant will continue to support the implementation of prescribing guidelines in health systems and clinical practices. In addition, the grant will supplement work with OHSU to increase the number of certified medication-assisted treatment providers, including nurse practitioners, and physician assistants. Work with coordinated care organizations to distribute a drug that I can't pronounce, kits to needle exchange programs, and expand peer-supported recovery services for individuals in recovery-supported housing. No state matching funds are required, and the agency expects to need one limited duration position to meet the requirements of this grant. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion. Yes, Senator Hansen.
I was just wondering if our Senate reading clerk is ever ill, may we call upon a representative from Benton County? That's all.
Yes, for a fee.
Chamber to chamber.
There you go.
Other discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Senator Winters, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On February 23rd, the Human Services Subcommittee recommended approval of the submission of a federal grant application from Oregon Health Authority to the Department of Human Health and Human Services in the amount of up to $1.5 million per year for 3 years to support expectant and parenting teens and young adults. The purpose of the grant is to provide expectant and parenting teens and young adults, as well as their families, with a seamless network of supportive services to improve their health and well-being. A key objective is to improve not only the health outcomes of the health and well-being. A key objective is to improve not only the health outcomes of the targeted population, but also educational, social, and economic outcomes that shape health. The agency intends to support 4 to 6 community colleges in Oregon to enhance their system of services for this population. The colleges would be chosen through an RFP process. Community colleges would be expected to provide core services in 5 domains, either through direct service provision of referrals and linkages. No state matching funds are required, and the agency does not need any additional positions. The community colleges that participate are expected to contribute a 25-cent match, either cash or in kind. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval, and I should add that should there be questions or comments, I was in another meeting at the time, and so the two good co-chairs decided that I should carry this pony.
That's what happens when you don't show up.
Thank you. Discussion. Representative Wisnant.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Winters. So the bill starts off, it doesn't say community colleges, but the testimony indicates that this is a community college program.
Madam Chair, Representative, the grant does not require that it be community colleges. It could be any institutions of higher education.
Follow up, Madam Chair. We have a very successful program, I think, what I've learned about expecting teens in high school. But this is, we're starting something now for people who are going to be older age. And is there an age restriction, or is it I mean, I just don't understand the bill. And I guess the big question I have is, Oregon Health Authority is saying that they're going to pass these funds through. Is it going to be competitive? Is it going to be to a specific nonprofit organization to provide the services? Who's providing the services, I guess?
Senator Steiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We asked this very question in committee, Representative Wisnant, and we were told that the grants would be based on well-written proposals with buy-in and skin in the game, as it were, from the people who would be receiving them, and they would only be supporting ones that would be based on evidence-based programs with very clear outcome measures around improving parenting and established programs. So these wouldn't be brand new programs. They would be implementation of well-studied existing programs in new environments.
I'd kindly request we carry this over or look at this. $105 million, I mean, that's not a great amount from the federal government, but it's still $105 million, and I'm not sure.
Is it
$105 million?
$1.5. What did I say? It'd be nice if it was $105.
But I'm have concerns, or if you want to pass it, I'll have to be a no, because I just don't understand the program. It could be a great program.
Senator Winters,
have a question, because you talked here. You know, what is the application deadline?
Let's see. This application is due March 24th.
I guess following on the good representative's questions, I'm just curious about the core mission of the health authority. It seems that the health authority has tentacles into all sorts of different activities, and I don't know what this ends up costing them administratively. I'm going to support the grant application, but I wonder, with an agency that is as badly out of balance financially as OHA is, what constitutes their core mission?
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Can we consider that a rhetorical question?
Yes.
for the moment?
Yeah, forever.
Senator Steiner-Hayward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate Senator Johnson's concerns. We actually just went through two full days of hearings on the Public Health Division, which is the division this would be coming through. And I have to say, and I think all of us on the Human Services Subcommittee agreed with this, regardless of chamber or caucus, that the Public Health Division does more with less money than almost any other state agency, and they do it with robust outcome measures that actually make a difference. And for example, not directly from the Public Health Division, but from some of the county public health agencies that have been involved with this, public health officers, I've heard some really interesting stories about how these parenting programs reduce ER utilization by young parents because they understand how to get access to preventive care. They understand when their child needs urgent medical attention. So implementation of these kinds of programs reduces costs in other areas by educating parents about appropriate, you know, so they understand what's normal in a young child and don't seek medical care inappropriately and do seek it appropriately. So I think I appreciate, Senator Johnson, your concerns. I have to say that of any division at the health authority, this is the one I trust by far the most. Which doesn't mean I don't trust the others, but I trust this one more.
Madam Chair? Yes, Senator.
Should the Oregon Health Authority be successful in receiving the grant, perhaps they should be required to come back and two things. One, to make certain that they're not adding staff to this particular grant app, and I think that's kind of standard for us to have them to come back to report back to us. So I'd just like to put that on the record of having them come back, since there are members who have some concern.
Yes, Representative Rayfield.
I would just second my co-chair's comments in terms of, you know, as we look at this, I mean, this is something that will improve, you know, the long-term health outcomes, and I think is consistent with the mission, especially within the public health side of OHA. And so I would, I certainly appreciate and respect the members that are not necessarily excited about this. However, this is something that our, you know, from the conversation that we had in our subcommittee, we will continue to recommend this back to the floor.
Yes, Senator Girard.
Oh, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think I'm going to side with the good senator from Scappoose. And the reason I'm really having problems is I'm going to vote for the grant because I don't care that much about the grant. But the agency itself, the hole that has been dug by that agency is really, really scary. I'm not saying they're not looking out for whatever they're supposed to be looking out for, but there has to be limitations, and some people have to be able to say no. And until I get a feeling that that's what's happening in the agency, I'll be pretty critical of the agency.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Would you mind if we took a 90-second recess so House Republicans can visit for a moment?
That's fine. We will be standing at ease for a short break. I don't know if that means we're uneasy or just means we're back in session. Representative McLean.
Madam Co-Chair, I move that this be set over to the next full Ways and Means hearing.
The motion has been made to set this over to the next meeting of this committee. Mr. Rocco, when is our next meeting?
Madam Chair, members, we're not planning on meeting again in the month of March unless some unexpected event occurs. So the next meeting would most likely be sometime in early April.
Okay. Thank you. The motion has been made. This is not subject to discussion, as I understand. We just take a vote. All those in favor, I suspect we should do a roll call vote on this one.
Madam Co-Chair?
Yes.
A point of clarification,
yes,
if I may, not discussion, but if this grant is due on the 23rd of March and we put it over till April, is there a consequence?
Yeah, we can't apply.
I thought there's no discussion.
That's right.
No, it's a more like a point of order. I'll take it. It's like an information. Yes,
can we comment on the? Can we comment? Thank you, Madam Chair. I voted on many grants that it was beyond the date, and the agency went ahead and did it on this dais. It's not. The agency can do it, and then we get the paper later.
Mr. Rocco, can you clarify that?
Madam Chair, the process. Representative Wisnett is absolutely correct. The practice, especially during the interim, the practice is that agencies notify the legislature they're intending to apply. They do, usually because we don't meet very often, they're in the interim. They go ahead and apply. The next time that the legislative review agency meets, we consider their application. If the legislative review entity then says, no, we didn't want you to apply for that, the agency simply withdraws the application. So that, if you're not concerned about that, the agency could go ahead and apply for this grant, even if we don't meet. And then if you do meet in April and you say, at that time, no, we decided we don't want you to apply, then they would just have to pull the grant back. If that's your understanding, then I think you could proceed with that approach.
May I ask Rocco?
Yes, Representative McLean.
Rocco, do the co-chairs have that power to schedule a meeting, say, next Friday?
Madam Chair, Representative McNay, absolutely. They could.
Thank you.
Current plan is that we wouldn't necessarily need to meet for any reason, but if that's a reason to meet, they could have a very quick meeting at any time, really. So.
Follow up, they could schedule a meeting Wednesday night at 8:35 p.m. if they wanted.
Madam Chair, Representative McLean, yes, they have that ability to do that. So.
Thank you.
There's been another request to stand at ease, so we'll be at ease again. There's a motion on back. The meeting has resumed. There's a motion on the table. Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate the co-chair's understanding of the basis of our motion, and it's a combination. So in light of that, I'll withdraw my motion.
Thank you, Representative McLean. Mr. Rocco, we would like to schedule a meeting of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means to address this item. This item will be the only item on the agenda. It will be next Thursday at 4:30 p.m. So we'll have, we're carrying this over about a week.
That would be, Madam Chair, that would be fine. We can schedule that with the possibility if there are other items that come up between now and then, like another grant that you could have a conversation about. Would you like that to be added to the agenda?
I can't believe you said
We're just trying to clear out work. You know,
just being efficient.
You can raise that with the co-chairs in a co-chairs meeting.
Okay, we'll do that.
Thank you, everybody. So this has been set over. We're no longer considering Oregon Health Authority, the item that Senator Winters raised. We're moving along now to a report. Senator Manning, this will be yours. Legislative Fiscal Office Semi-Independent Agency Reports.
Madam Co-Chair, on February 8th, the Legislative Fiscal Office presented a report on its review of statutorily required information submitted by 12 semi-independent agencies. The review covers agency performances for the 2013-15 biennium and adopted the budget for the 2015-17 biennium. LFO found that all 12 agencies submitted reports that complied with statutory requirements. LFO makes the following three recommendations for improving the semi-annual independent, semi-independent agency review process. Number one, all 12 agencies continue to follow the update reporting guidelines prepared by the LFO for future reports. Mm-hmm. Number two, the Oregon Wine Board includes in its report an inventory review and written documentation from the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to support the board's revenue deposits. And three, the Joint Committee on Legislative Audits consider a review to identify all statutorily established entities that receive support from the general fund, lottery funds, state levy tax revenues, or court fees, but whose budgets currently are not subject to legislative review, in order to determine whether any of those entities should be included in this report, or whether alternative criteria for those entities to provide financial reporting to the legislators are appropriate. The General Government Subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the report and approval of the LFO recommendations.
Thank you. Is there discussion? Objections? We've received the report. Thank you. That concludes all of the items that were on our agenda. There are four points I would like to make really briefly. If the members of this committee have not yet replied to a query about a public hearing on March 9th or March 16th, would you please reply to that email message from yesterday or the day before?
Yesterday.
You want to do a Skype?
And Mr. Rocco, there is no meeting scheduled for next Friday, a week from today. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay.
There is one for Thursday, however. Yes.
Indeed.
FYI.
I would like to thank the Legislative Fiscal Office and anyone else who is preparing materials for us, and I want to acknowledge that I do appreciate having additional descriptive information in the online version of our agenda where the meeting materials are held so that we can see which grant and which agency is moving along. So with appreciation for that information management work that you do. And finally, to all my colleagues, Senate and House on this committee, thank you for a very fine meeting. We are adjourned. Meeting. We are adjourned.